I'm Susie Welch, the host of Becoming You, a podcast where I help you stop living by default and start living by design. Listen to Becoming You wherever you get your podcasts.
Bradford Show.
That's my open?
That's what they used to call me, Swivel Hit Bradford.
That's my open.
I'm waiting for you to justify your stupid opinion.
Bradford Show.
That's delicious.
Sam Kennedy, the first ever appearance on the Bradford Show. Is that right, Sam?
First ever, but I've thankfully got my T-shirt.
I mean, you did what most people don't do. You get the T-shirt first before you go on the podcast, so you must be a big shot.
Well, I spent a career making deals, so this deal worked out for me. But I'm happy to be with you.
All right, Sam. There's a few things I want to talk to you about. Number one is that it was a morning show when you swung on by, and we talked about attendance and likability of the team and everything else. What we can't ignore is the TV ratings. And we don't have the radio ratings yet, I don't think, unless you have them and I don't. But the TV ratings have been off the charts. I surfaced this the other day about that the Red Sox actually beat the Celtics on game one of the playoffs for the Celtics. Does that surprise you? No, we're not talking about the fannies in the seats. It's been very cold. I'm not ready to go there. But does that surprise you in terms of where you guys are at in terms of the ratings?
Well, nothing surprises me with our fan base. This is the most loyal and passionate market in baseball. And I know there's been some, in our 17 years here, some years have been better than others. But if you get off to a good start and show that, hopefully you have a team built for success, knock on wood, as I say this, in October, I really believe this marketplace will buy in. We're lucky to be in the best market in baseball. There has been a tremendous uptick in television viewership, and I think it has a lot to do with the way we're playing, and it's a huge credit to Alex Cora and everyone in that dugout for the start that we've gotten off to. Came out of spring training ready to go, and it's been rewarding to see, but obviously it's extremely early, and we've got a long way to go.
What surprised you about the reaction to this team, though, Sam? I mean, because I get it that the likability question, every time you guys came out, whether it was a core press conference, whether it was winter meetings, whether it was whatever, whether it was spring training, the likability question came up. But as we went along for the first couple of weeks, it flipped. And I got to be honest with you, I didn't really think that it would flip that quick. And maybe the best example of this was Joe Kelly, the reliever who was the most unpopular guy and then doesn't have to buy a drink in Boston for the rest of his life now. Did that surprise you how much it flipped, at least the perception of it?
You know, it did surprise me a little bit, just that there's a lot of lingering questions around likability, and I struggle with the likability concept because I think what you see is when the team is struggling, typically when the team is struggling and things happen, you'll see a huge fan reaction in a negative way, or a media reaction in a negative way, and when the team is winning, typically you're referred to as a very likable team. Last year was different. We had several incidents that, despite a very compelling, interesting, competitive team, we seemed that we had just a drumbeat of flare-ups or events that were unfortunate, and we wish we had those to sort of do over. But that's the way life goes. That's the way baseball goes. And so it was a tough year, even though it was a relatively successful year, winning 93 games and making the postseason. Obviously, we didn't get the ultimate goal accomplished. So, anyway, it's a long way of saying that I think if you have a team that is working hard, everyone pulling in the same direction and putting up W's night in and night out, and having each other's back and staying together as a group, you're going to have this feeling in the marketplace that this is a team I can get around, I can invest in, I can support. But again, it's early. We are off to a terrific start, and all the credit goes to the players and to Alex and his staff and baseball ops. They've done done a terrific job, but we don't want to get ahead of ourselves. We got a long, long way to go, but it's been gratifying,
yeah,
for sure.
You know, and Sam, you mentioned last year about sort of the incidents and things like that, but after the year happened, multiple players on the record said, you know, we were in first place the entire year, and it felt like we were in last place. And I guess my question to you would, did you get a sense of that? Did you, from where you were sitting and where maybe from Dave was sitting, from where maybe the ownership was sitting, did you understand that it felt like that all the way through the year? And as I think both Kelly and Porcello told me in another very, very well-listened to podcast, that they said it wasn't until really we looked ourselves in the mirror after game two of the playoffs and we said, wait, this is a reality of the situation. But they said that it was this lingering feeling that even though they were in last place, I mean, that is an aberration for any first place, any second place team, really.
Yeah, it's hard for front office executives, ownership, to really understand the clubhouse dynamic. You know, the way I've been here for 17 years, and the way that I view the clubhouse is that is a place for the players, for the coaching staff. Sure, from time to time, we're down there and we're communicating, but we're not on the buses, we're not on the flights, we're not in the hotel on the road for the most part. So it is you know, difficult to understand exactly what's going on at all times. But yes, you did feel that there were some issues, there was some tension, and it just seemed to be one sort of event after another. That, as I said, you wish you could take back or do differently. I think as an organization, when you have tension or the feeling that these players have addressed at spring training or early part of this year, you'd rather not have that feeling. But at the same time, you know, from a ownership front office perspective, you're not living it day to day the way the players are, and you know, they really are the ones that you know, have addressed it, and I'm glad that we've moved on and we seem to be in a better place. That said, maybe it's just my experience or my time here after 17 years. You recognize that things can change very, very quickly. So one of the things that is to me is rewarding is to see Alex Cora. I've talked to him every couple of days since he's been here. He's got great perspective, and he says, look, the guys are having fun, they're playing well, but we know that this is a really tough division, and it's going to be a battle all the way through. So he has great perspective, and he's got experience playing here. He knows that. So hopefully that experience will serve us well when we do encounter a difficult stretch.
Well, how do you do that? You're the president of the team, and so you have to – when you guys get together and really make a decision at the end of the year about what course you're going to take – you have to know the pulse of what's going on to a certain extent. So from where you sit, how do you do that? Like you just said, you can't have the ultimate feeling of the clubhouse. Does it help maybe that Dombrowski, Dave, does make these trips more than most GMs or president of baseball operations? Because I remember, you know, Ben would go on one trip a month, and that's what he did. How, from where your office, where your seat is in this organization, how do you get that vibe? Is this word of mouth? How does it happen?
Communication, communication, communication. You try your best to make sure that you're accessible and available to whether it's Dave or Alex or the staff. But really, you know, my role as president and CEO of the club is not to be on the road with the team or in the clubhouse or in the dugout. From time to time, I will be in those places, but I see my role as supporting the whole organization, making sure everyone has the resources they need to do their job, and then really get out of the way and let people do their jobs. And Dave is a very hands-on general manager, president of baseball ops. He, as you mentioned, he travels on the road with the team. He's in touch with Alex and the staff every single day. And that is unique, and that is different. We have not had that management approach here before in the past, whether it was Ben Ben Sherrington or Theo Epstein. It's just a different style. It's worked for Dave throughout the course of his career, and since he's been here, we've had very good success on the field, and hopefully we'll take that next step this year.
You know,
but really, it's about empowering people, letting them do their jobs, and trying to communicate the best you possibly can.
You know, you talk about having the pulse of what's going on. I'm going to take you back to a place that maybe you, when you started this podcast, you probably never, ever thought I would take you back to. And this is 2005. 2005 was, you were the head of sales, right? Correct?
Yes.
Okay.
I believe so.
You have the tone in your voice, like, where are you going with it?
Way back. I'm trying to remember what I was doing in 2005 and if we should end this podcast right now.
No.
We'll keep going.
I was just thinking of this today as I was trying to lose more weight on the treadmill. But it was when Theo left and all that was going on. And the dynamic of trying to bridge parties, mend fences, get everybody like to see the other side of you. And what I'm talking about in 2005, obviously, was with Larry and Theo. And you knew Theo very well. You weren't in the position you are now. But John Henry had to do that. And I'm just like wondering, like, what do you remember about how that was handled? Because the reason I'm even surfacing because of the stuff that's going on with Brady and Gronk and Kraft and Belichick. But I'm just interested about from where you're sitting now and where John Henry sat, what that was like.
Yeah, well, I obviously remember it very well. It was a difficult time for the organization. We had achieved something that had not been achieved in 86 years, of course, winning a World Series. And, we all came together in 2000 and end of 2001, beginning of 2002 to get to that moment. And it was so special and just an incredible thing for everyone, for John, for Tom, for Larry, for Theo, for the rest of us that were lucky enough to be a part of that championship year. And then to have the contract negotiations break down between Theo and ownership was very, very difficult for all of us, because we felt we were in a very, very good place as an organization. You recognize that's a part of the industry, a part of the business, and ultimately ownership did a great job in getting all parties on the same page, and there are times when ownership gets involved, and especially with big issues facing the franchise, like a president and CEO or a general manager, big acquisition in the off season, and that was a moment in time that communication was key. And John and Tom got personally involved with Larry and Theo and sort of mending fences and bringing everybody back together. And thank God they did, because you saw what resulted: a 2007 World Series championship and the underpinning of an organization that went on to win again in 2013. And hopefully we'll continue to have sustained success. But it's hard. Look, these organizations, we're 300-plus people. It's a relatively small company, and we're a family here. And families go through really great times, and they go through difficult times. So we've had our fair share in the 17 years of some really high highs and some low lows. But it's I personally wouldn't want to do it in any other market other than Boston, because the Red Sox matter more here to the marketplace than any of the 29 other markets. With all due respect, the Red Sox are so important to our fan base, and we know that, and that's why we feel so fortunate to be a part of this organization.
You know, you're right. Families go through this stuff, but typically a lot of times you can say, well, you're right and you're wrong. When you're at the ownership level and you can see the value in both sides, and clearly that was the case then. And I think clearly that's what, without either one of us probably knowing, that's what Robert Kraft is going through now. But that is the most delicate situation that an executive in that position can go through. I would imagine you saw it firsthand.
Yeah, look, you have incredibly talented, incredibly competent experienced people, strong-minded, smart individuals that come together as part of an organization. And in the case of the Patriots, the Celtics, the Red Sox, the Bruins, I think the ownership groups and the management teams have created an era in Boston sports history unlike any other period ever in Boston sports. So, that will come with some high highs and some low lows, and I certainly would never comment about another organization, but it's been really remarkable to witness what's happened in Boston sports, and we want to keep that going here. I'll tell you, winning three World Series championships has caused John and Tom to be hungry for more. This is growing up here, you know, all you can ask for is ownership that puts the resources into the product on the field, and these guys have done that, and we need to keep it going as we move forward. This is amazingly, it's our 17th year here together, and I can tell you the competitive fire is there. You know, I'm getting text messages at 12:50 a.m. from John and Tom and Dave, and we're all texting back and forth about the game, and so the competitive juices are going as strong as ever right now.
So what you're saying is they like being owners of this team, and they're not going to sell the team next year.
That I can assure you of. They are as committed to Boston and the Red Sox as ever, and it's great to have ownership stability. You've got that at all the teams in Boston right now, and I think that's a recipe for success.
All right, Sam, I know you got to get going pretty soon here, but last question is something I'm complete 180, but maybe we can sort of morph it into the commitment of the team, and that's the pursuit of Shohei Ohtani, which it was a bizarre situation. And it was a bizarre situation for, number one, because as the offseason unfolded, we have no idea. And then you talk to people in the organizations, and they had no idea. So about where this guy was coming from, what path he was going to take. What do you remember about this? What do you remember about your guy? And I read Alex's story. It was Michael Silverman's stories about, you know, the package that you put together and the videos and everything else like that. But I'm just curious, like what are you going to remember about that whole deal?
Disappointment.
Yeah.
It's frustrating. We were really, really hopeful that if we just wanted an at bat, you know, and this guy is a incredible talent, and we feel obviously we have a team built for success, and he could have been a great piece to this team or any team. And I just remember being disappointed that we didn't get an at bat. But then I was quickly reminded by Dustin Pedroia that hey, move on. You know, we got the right guys in this clubhouse. So, but it was frustrating just because you want to get an at bat. You felt like we had a great chance. I was looking forward to the competition with the Yankees, the Cubs, the other teams that were rumored to be in the mix. And I've got a very close friend at CAA, and there were certain rules and regulations that they set up, and so I was very careful not to communicate with him at all during leading up to the process. But I called him afterwards and said, "Hey, what the heck happened?" And I got the sense that even they didn't know which teams he was going to pick to quote unquote interview. We move on, and we will hopefully have more games against him like last night.
What was the most unique part of the presentation? And everyone has their "this is why you should come here." What was for you? This is where we can maybe separate ourselves. Not to say that he's going to choose because of this, but just looking back at it, what was the most unique part?
Yeah, two things. First was just an incredible look back at the baseball history and tradition of the Red Sox, and specifically the winning culture and tradition since 2002 when John and Tom arrived. That's a huge point of pride, because at the end of the day, we're here to win baseball games and win World Series championships. So there was just some great memories from our time here. So that was big. And then the other thing was just how well Boston shows up as a city on the global stage in terms of quality of life and all that we have to offer here. And you really recognize the transformation of the Fenway neighborhood as a destination to live, work, play. It's an entertainment district. And just 15 years ago, I don't think you could have said that about the Fenway neighborhood. The development that's taken place around the ballpark in terms of residential, retail, and office space has just been transformational. And we got word that that was something that was important to the player, and we focused on that. Obviously, it didn't do us any good, but it was a ton of hard work. Allard Baird and Jared Banner did a great job, and I was mostly, disappointed. I mentioned disappointment. I was disappointed for them because I know how much time and effort they put into this, and at the end of the day, we didn't get them, but it was not for lack of trying.
I thought for sure you were going to say the Celtics, Bruins, and Patriots jersey with Ohtani on the back.
Well, I was overcome with I didn't want to bring them into this this failure of the process.
It's not their fault. I mean, they're the closers. It's like Kelly Olynyk and the Kevin Durant wooing. So,
well, that's you're right. I do remember going to a Bruins game with Theo and Keith Folk way back in the day. You never know what's going to appeal to a potential free agent or a player. It's very rare that we find ourselves in that sort of recruiting mode. You're usually, drafting or trading for a player, but when you have that opportunity, you really want to aggressively recruit. And in the case of Keith Folk, we took him to a Bruins game. We had Bobby Orr call him, which was huge. Imagine being a huge hockey fan and getting a call from the great Bobby Orr. So we try to pull out all the stops, and sometimes it works, and sometimes it doesn't.
Before I let you go, so what is, besides the Folk one, what's the most memorable recruiting pitch that you were part of?
I would say that was probably it, just because it involved hockey. And at my core, I'm a hockey guy.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yes, yes. The men's league. We know this.
Yeah. But yeah, there's been a lot, and I'll say that's what's great about working with Theo and Ben and Dave. You really try to pull together and use all your resources. Dinner at the Southern in Nashville was one of the better ones because David Price did choose to come to Boston. One of the best meals I've ever had. I haven't spent too much time in Nashville, but that was a lot of fun, and listening to Mike Hazen tell stories is always fun as well.
Did you know walking out of the Southern that you had him?
No, definitely not. Dave and the team did a great job, and John Henry and I and Tom were there to support. But it was sort of a jump ball, and we didn't know leaving that dinner, but ultimately it got done.
Did you see the Sinks there?
What?
The Sinks. You don't remember this. See, this is what I went to the Southern. The Sinks, they aren't Sinks.
Someone else reminded me of that. I swear I washed my hands after going to the bathroom.
I believe you. Yeah, it wasn't a test to see if you washed your hands. It was in case people don't know what we're talking about, there's no, I don't even know how to explain this. It's like a tabletop, and the Sinks, the water just rolls off the tabletop. So,
I just remembered the food was outstanding. And that the city of Nashville was absolutely rocking. There was a lot going on down there, and we had a good night.
Well, this is your lucky day because for appearing on the podcast, you get a $100 gift card to the Southern in Nashville, Tennessee.
Sam, count me in.
Yes, Sam, thanks so much, man. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Rob. Take care.
Welcome to Radio Rental. The scariest stories you've ever heard in your life. All told by real people. And off we go.
This wasn't a human being that I saw. There's something here in this house, something not of this world.
There was a woman moving through the hall. I stepped back and I was completely alone.
Radio Rental is available now. Listen for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.